We are taking a journey through the life of Jesus, and we're getting near the end, and today we find ourselves in Luke chapter 19. Let's read some verses together as we go. Luke 19, beginning with verse 1, it says, Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through the town. Now, if you were with us last Sunday when I was Michelle and I were away for our anniversary, if you were with us last Sunday here, Anthony talked about the story of blind Bart, who was healed at Jericho. This story takes place in the same location, same time frame, and we want to read the story together. Jesus is in Jericho. He's getting close to Jerusalem in the near future. It says in verse number 2 that there was a man there named Zacchaeus. He was the chief tax collector in the region, and he had become very rich. Now, I want to talk about this chief tax collector. What does that mean? We've talked about tax collectors a lot through the story of Jesus. They seem to be around. They seem to be very hated by most people, especially the religious community. The tax collectors are a boo to them. So what is the deal with the tax collectors? Well, let's talk about that real quick. The Roman Empire at this time is ruling much of that part of the world. Empires have come and gone. Israel and other nations have experienced the devastating effects for centuries. Taken into captivity. They've never been able to build their nation back to its former greatness. They are now ruled over the umpteenth empire. They fought for their former greatness as a nation at times during the Maccabean Wars, but it never worked out for very long. They've had the Assyrian Empire come and go, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Greeks, and now the Romans. The Seleucids and the Ptolemies were in the middle of all of that. And the Roman Empire is the big power in town. And they want to collect taxes from all the areas over which they rule, because those taxes will pay for things. Now, most of those nations would like to pay taxes to support their own infrastructure, right? But their taxes are being taken by Rome to support Rome's infrastructure and to support Rome's military might to keep control where they already have it. No one likes that. And tax collectors were on multiple tiered systems. That's why we have a chief tax collector here. The top of the tax deal would be the Roman Senate or the emperor, who decided what every province they controlled owed them in taxes. After the Senate or the emperor, the next level down would be what they called the publicani, where we get the word publican from in some of your old English translations, the publicani. The publicani were wealthy people who would go to Roman tax auctions where they would basically bid off large sections of their empire to say, we want this much tax revenue from this area. You can auction and bid for it. And if you get it, then you get to take your private business, your private enterprise, and raise the taxes from that region. Plus whatever extra you get, that's how you get wealthy. But just pay us what we expect from that region. And private companies would come and people would fight to get portions of the empire to collect taxes and pay what Rome expects and keep the rest. And that would be the publicani. Below them would be the Archatelones, or the chief tax collectors, like Zacchaeus. They would be also wealthy people who could come into an area and make a bid on maybe a smaller section than the publicani, but under the publicani, they could get a section of area that they would harvest taxes from that area and pay it up. And of course, every level of the tax structure, those people are taking extra and making themselves wealthy. They're paid well anyhow, but who's going to stop you from getting a little further ahead? Not everyone was dishonest. Although even if you weren't dishonest, you were probably rich just because the job paid well, and some were very crooked. Then the lowest level would be the talones, which would be the tax collectors at the local booths in town. And almost every nation, including Israel, these would be local people. Local people, because these local people could know their own region. They would know what's up in their area. They would know their fellow countrymen, where the bodies are buried. They would be able to get the tax money that the country wants. But it made them very unpopular. Everyone hated them. In Israel, everyone hated the people among them who would take a job being a tax collector. It was a good living, but it cost you socially because everyone hated you. And not only did people hate you, but the religious crowd really hated them, because in Israel, they believed they were God's chosen people from Father Abraham, and therefore they should be self-governing. They shouldn't have foreign powers ruling over their nation. They wanted to be free from all that and restored to their former greatness, and they believed it was their spiritual mandate. So their politics and their religion seemed to come pretty close to their emotions in a lot of ugly ways. And they hated the tax collectors. They would say, you're traitors to your country. You're on the wrong side of the political aisle. There's no space for you here. You're not even true children of Abraham. That's the attitude towards tax collectors. Understandably, frustrating. And Zacchaeus is not the lowest level. He's not on the ground floor doing the dirtiest work. He's a archatelonis. He's a chief tax collector. But he's known as very wealthy. He says he's become very rich, and he lives in Jericho. And Jesus is passing through the town where he lives. In verse number 3, it says he, Zacchaeus, tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd. Maybe if you grew up in church or Sunday school or Bible clubs when you were little, you may have heard a little song we sang about Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus was a wee little man, and a wee little man was he. He climbed up in the sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see. Okay, that song is based upon this story we're seeing today. Zacchaeus is not super tall. He's super rich, but he can't get up front of the crowd. And it's like one of those things where everyone wants to see Jesus because he is a celebrity. He was a miracle worker, healer, feed people, teach people about God. And wherever he went, the crowds would flock. The streets are packed like they are for parades locally, or perhaps the Labor Day Parade in Lowell, or places where people just pack out chairs days early. Get your seat early, right? And so Zacchaeus shows up and there's no space to get up front, but he's short. So he's doing the old, trying to look over the crowd and see Jesus, and he can't get a view. So he's all stressing out. But Zacchaeus is not the kind of person to give up and go home. He didn't get where he was in life because he didn't have some moxie about him. So he says, I'm going to find a way. Verse 4, it says, so he ran ahead and he climbed a sycamore fig tree beside the road, for Jesus was going to pass that way. He knows where Jesus is going to go, and he wants to get there first, and the crowds are still there, but he finds a tree, and he could get up in that tree and get out, and hey, no one can stop me now. I'm going to see Jesus. Now, why does Zacchaeus want to see Jesus? He's a tax collector. This is not exactly the Jesus crowd, or I'm sorry, not exactly the religious crowd. People like Zacchaeus knew where they stood in society, and especially in good religious society. Why would you even care to see a rabbi coming through? Why does Zacchaeus care? Is it just simply because he is a celebrity? Or is there more to the story? And I believe there's more to the story. But to tell that, we have to remember something we studied over a year ago in the story of Jesus. We're going to look back for a few minutes at another story that we told quite a while ago at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. And that's okay, because the story of Zacchaeus is not a super long story. It's a short story, but Zacchaeus is also a short guy, so that works out. But we're going to come back to this story in a while, and first let's rewind and go back to an early part of the ministry of Jesus where a story happens that sets us up for today. So we're going to rewind. I need a rewind sound effect. That was terrible. That was not a good... Can anybody give me a better rewind sound effect in this room than that I just gave you? I could use some help here. Nobody? No, I'm on my own. Man, I used to have videotapes. I used to rewind them all the time. I should know how that sounds. But anyhow, okay, rewind. In the beginning of Jesus' ministry, he's gathering together his team that he wants to pour into. And in Mark chapter 2, verse 14, we saw this story. Let's take a few minutes on it. It says, as Jesus walked along, he saw Levi, or Matthew, the son of Alphaeus, sitting at his tax collector's booth. Now, Mark and Luke refer to him as Levi, but Matthew writes about himself as being named Matthew. He has two names. That's not very as common. The first one, Levi, is his given Hebrew name from his parents when he was a baby. It was a very important name to their history and their culture. Levi was the name of their great ancestor, the great-grandson of Abraham, the son of Jacob or Israel himself, one of the 12 sons. Levi was a spiritual, his descendants were priestly people. And so his parents named him with a name that meant something to their faith and towards their heritage. But Levi has chosen to be a tax collector. And as we mentioned earlier, they were pretty much shunned. They were considered traitors, and they weren't real children of Abraham in many people's eyes. Perhaps in his own mom and dad's eyes, they were disappointed in him. Many people did disown their children over these kinds of choices back then. So Levi doesn't even go by his birth name. He goes by a name that was more Greek and Roman in its acceptability. It's a name, Matthew, that means beloved by God. Some people believe that Jesus gave him that name later, just like he gave Simon the name Peter and Saul the name Paul, all Hebrew names given Greek names or Roman names. But the bottom line is, we don't know, but he goes by Matthew. Probably it's safer in his business not to go by the name of people who hated him anyhow. But he's a wealthy man. He has a tax collector's booth. And one day Jesus walks past him at his booth. And look what Jesus says. He says, "Follow me and be my disciple." Now hold on. It's the next verse on the screen here. "Follow me, be my disciple." And so Jesus said to him. Now, this is crazy. Because for Jesus to call someone to be his disciple, this is what a rabbi would do. Jesus was considered by many to be a rabbi. He was much more. He said he was much more. He obviously had the hand of God on his life through miracles. But rabbis would take the kids who grew up in their schools that many of the Pharisees would start. These kids would be taught to read and write the scriptures. They'd find the best and the brightest among them, the ones with the most ability. And they would choose them to be proteges of a rabbi, and they would be mentors to those kids at a young age. And Jesus didn't choose anybody like that to be a part of his group. He chose really odd people. He chose a bunch of fishermen, like Peter and Andrew and James and John. These are people who did not pass the aptitude test to be in the circle like that. But Jesus is like, "I don't care. I'm not picking who people think I should. I'm pouring into the folks others overlook." And that made some sense, I guess, if you can accept that. But Matthew, a tax collector? Many would think that Matthew should resign from that kind of a lifestyle, turn his life around, be a better man for a long time, and maybe just maybe some of us will eventually forgive him and find him worthy of such an honor. But Jesus walks up to him at his booth and says, "Hey, come be a part of my entourage." And it says Levi, Matthew, got up and he followed him. Now, what made him do that? I don't know. Because he already left paid a price socially to be a tax collector, to be rich doing so. But now he's going to walk away from that as well. They'll give that job away. He'll never see it again. For what? To follow Jesus. Verse 15 tells us this. It says, later, Levi, or Matthew, invited Jesus and his disciples to his home as dinner guests, along with many tax collectors and other disreputable sinners. Now, this is important. First of all, it tells us how rich Matthew was. Most homes in those days were very small with one or two rooms. In fact, most archaeological discoveries in the Capernaum region have shown us that most small houses had one room, maybe two at most, unless you were rich. And Matthew has such a big place that he throws what Luke calls a banquet. Better food, big courtyards, multiple rooms in the house. He can host Jesus and the other disciples and many tax collectors in this house and other disreputable sinners. But he wants Jesus. He says, "Jesus, you invited me to follow you for reasons I don't understand, but I'm honored. Would you meet my friends? I want them to know who you are." And he says to his friends, "You got to meet this man, a religious man, a man who claims to come from God. Yes, but he's different. He's welcomed me in, and I think you'd like him." And they come, and they all meet each other at Matthew's house. And notice that it mentions tax collectors and other disreputable sinners. When you look at that phrase is used a lot, especially by religious people, the tax collectors and other sinners. And when they refer to other disreputable sinners, it usually is a certain kinds of people that were on the wrong side of the commandments, especially the Ten Commandments, like murderers, thieves, and adulterers, or basically prostitutes or sexually improper people. They were all groups of disreputable sinners, those types of people. And tax collectors are always mentioned along with them, because tax collectors were maybe not always wrong morally, but they were wrong ideologically. And to many people in the world, there's nothing worse you can be than wrong ideologically, in my view. I can overlook other things, but don't be wrong ideologically with me, right? I mean, that's a big no-no. So the tax collectors and the other terrible groups of sinners, because we're all sinners, but there's those types. And these people hang out with each other. And why do they hang out with each other? They hang out with each other because they're all outcast. No respectable family, no religious groups are going to welcome them in, and so they're going to be buddies because you find community where you can find community. And Matthew says to his people, come meet Jesus. And Jesus says, absolutely. And they sit down and have a meal. And this causes drama. If you remember the story without reading the whole thing, the religious community threw a fit. They said, Jesus is eating with those kinds of people because that was considered table fellowship. When you had table fellowship, it was a statement that's beyond just saying hi in the street to somebody you don't agree with. This is almost like it almost seemed like you're condoning something. Now, Jesus was a man of grace and truth. He lived right, but he was eating with people that you wouldn't agree with. He was having a meal, table fellowship. It sends a really bad message, as we would say today. And Jesus didn't care. In fact, it goes on in the rest of the verse to say this. Let me add this to the screen. It says, there were many people of this kind among Jesus' followers. What kind? Ideologically wrong, morally wrong categories of people, according to the others. Many people of those kind were among Jesus' followers. And in case you're tempted to think that when it says among his followers means that they used to be whatever, but they've turned their life around and they're good old-fashioned Jesus Christian followers toting the line, that's not what it means. And you know that if you've been with us for the last year and a half, because what we've seen is that what it means is that they just followed Jesus wherever he went. These are people that they would follow him like groupies, like just a bunch of people, like some of you do when your favorite music bands anywhere nearby, you always go to hear them every time. They would just go from town to town. If he was anywhere close by, they would just be around to see the miracles and see the feedings and the healings and to hear his teaching. And they just wanted to be around, and they were rough. But they sat down and ate with him, and they felt loved by him. And so they went wherever he would go because they felt like they were welcome. And that was weird to many people. And it builds to a climax. I'm reviewing a little bit for a reason. It builds to a climax that we saw a few months ago in Luke 15, where Jesus is teaching a large gathering of people, as he often did. But while he's teaching, the religious people in the room are still bothered and they're distracted because those kinds of people are also in the room again. Like, why are these people keep showing up when Jesus is teaching? This should be a holy gathering for good people who care about the right things. And when that kind of crowd is always in the room, I think there's something wrong with that. Jesus must not be saying the right kind of stuff, because if he was, they wouldn't feel welcome here. Jesus, you need to step up your game and say, get right or get out. I mean, you're doing something wrong here, because these people keep showing up and they feel comfortable, and that says something about your leadership. And they were mad in Luke 15. And Jesus has to spend a whole thing teaching them that they're actually wrong in their outlook towards the people in the room. And that's why I told the story of the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. But this was a tension point, because people who were not getting with the program in their life fast enough still wanted to be around Jesus, and that bothered the people because they shouldn't feel so comfortable. You shouldn't be eating with them for sure. But the bizarre truth, and this is a statement I'm going to put on the screen. I've made it before through the years. It's not original with us, but it's so important. And this is what we're setting up. It blows my mind because people who were nothing like Jesus liked Jesus. And Jesus liked people who were nothing like him. And that's incredible. And that's true today, by the way. Large surveys have been done through groups like Barna and others through the years that have showed that even to this day, many people who consider themselves non-religious or not Christian, when you talk to them and they're surveyed, the overwhelming response is many people are like Jesus. Jesus is pretty well regarded. Not by everybody, but by many people. Now, religious people are not. Many Christians are not well regarded because of how they feel we act. But Jesus is usually considered in decent regard many places. And he was then by people who didn't like the religious community, but they thought Jesus was great. And though they weren't like him, they liked him. And Jesus, though they weren't like him, he liked them. And they hung around and they followed him. And they kept showing up to his meetings and bothering others because they felt welcomed. And that's important for us to point out. I point it out because I believe that if Jesus was here today, it'd be the same story. It's easy for us 2,000 years later to read a story. And because we identify with Jesus, we think we're team Jesus. So if they like Jesus, then we do too. If they oppose Jesus, we oppose them. But the truth is, the religious crowd that opposed Jesus is more like us than we want to admit. The religious crowd who fought Jesus in that day were people a lot like many of us. They read their scriptures, they studied their scriptures, they memorized their scriptures, they taught the scriptures, they wanted to hear them taught. They wanted everyone around them to follow the scriptures and live according to what they thought was right. And they were sincere, and they were frustrated because Jesus shows up and he does not lead the right way, the way that you're supposed to do it that way. You're like, that's unconventional, that's not right, you're dangerous. They thought he was wrong because they were sure they had God figured out right, and they condemned how he led, especially cared for people, that they thought no righteous religious leader would do that. I think if Jesus was here today, it'd be the same thing. I know that Jesus did not come to start another religion. Like, Jesus was fought most directly by religion when he was on this earth. And he came to give us something better than religion. He came to give us a relationship with God. But over time, we've turned Christianity into another religion, the religion of Christianity. And if he was here today, I think that many people would oppose him because of who he might hang around with and things he might say and how he might do what he does. Or people who lead in this day like Jesus would if he was here today get criticized. I see it. I see it on social media. I see it in the world. We drag Christian leaders or churches or influencers who don't do the ministry of God the way we think they should do it. We're harsh because we think it's wrong because we know how to do it right. And yet in the story of Jesus, it was the same criticism he received then, and I think he would receive now. Be very careful how much we condemn people for ministering to folks we don't agree with them serving. They might be more like Jesus than we are. It's a thought. Anyhow, all of that sets us up for today's story. I got to get back to Zacchaeus. So we got to fast forward. I'm not even going to try. Someone help me with this. Got a fast forward sound effect. Can someone do better than me? Okay, I'll take it. So we're back to current times. So Zacchaeus, thank you. Zacchaeus' story. Here's what's going on. Zacchaeus is wanting to see Jesus. Why? Because Jesus is a celebrity? Maybe. But maybe because Zacchaeus has heard about a man who welcomes people like him in the way that no religious person ever would. Right? Perhaps, maybe, Zacchaeus was even at Matthew's party. Many tax collectors were there. Or maybe not. He was a chief tax collector. Maybe he was too big and important for that. But you know the word's going to spread through that community. People are going to speak. Did you know that a bunch of us were invited to be at the house with this man from God who welcomed them and ate with them? And yeah, they're following him around. The stories have no doubt circulated back that this man's different. He don't treat us like good, upstanding, moral people normally treat people like us. He cares. And Zacchaeus climbs that tree, having to wonder, is it possible that this man has a message that God loves me, that God values me, that there's a place for me? So he hangs over that tree and he looks, hoping that maybe he can see Jesus pass by. Maybe Jesus will glance his way and they'll exchange quick eye contact. And in verse number 5, it says, when Jesus came by, he looked up at Zacchaeus and called him by name. Woo! Okay, first of all, he looked up means he locked eyes. Maybe he stops and looks right at him. Zacchaeus' heart is probably pounding in his chest. And then he calls him by name. How does he know his name? I'm not wearing my name tag today. Did someone rat me out? He's up there thinking, what in the world? Zacchaeus, Jesus says, quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today. Like he's like basically saying, I'm here for you. Like how does he even know? And I'm the target of his plans for the day? Did Matthew, the former tax collector, mention me? Why does Jesus want to talk to him, spend time with me? This is better. Up in the tree, I could hope to see him and maybe hear something he says. But in my house, all these people who held me back are outside the house. I'm in the house. I can spend quality time with Jesus. Zacchaeus can't believe what is happening. Of all the people to eat with that day. Look at verse 6. It says, Zacchaeus quickly climbed down and he took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. Now, those words on that screen, great excitement and joy, those are the emotions that you and I would think that a Jesus follower would feel to be in the presence of Jesus. That's what we say, if I could spend a day with Jesus. That's Sunday morning for us. We come here and we have joy to be in the presence of God. We sing songs like, there's joy in the house of the Lord today. And we won't be quiet. We'll shout out your praise because we have joy because we're the goodies. But the people out there who are the baddies, they wouldn't have joy to see. They don't care about him. Why is Zacchaeus, this terrible tax collector who everyone thinks, oh, the worst of the worst, why is he showing the emotions to spend time with Jesus that day that we would think would be our emotions? It almost doesn't make sense, unless maybe we have misread that people want a God who loves them, and maybe we misread the heart of God towards people that some of us don't like. So Zacchaeus is excited. And this is what I call the ripple effects. The ripple effects. You know what a ripple effect is, right? If you go out to Cedar Lake, you take a big old large rock and you throw it into the water, hits the water, splashes. You notice the splash from the impact and you'll think that's it. But if you pay attention, you'll notice that, from that spot of contact, that water will cause ripples to flow from that space all out. Go on and on and on for ways. The ripple effect. This story today is the ripple effect of Jesus making a decision that in his ministry he would eat with anyone. He ate with anyone. He ate with religious people who, while he ate with them, they criticized him for what he was doing in the room. He ate with disreputable sinners who the religious people also criticized him for eating with. Common theme there. But he would eat with anyone. And he made a decision. When I come to this earth and lay my divine privilege aside, I will eat with anyone and they will criticize me and they will condemn me and they'll want to kill me. And that's the plan anyhow. But I'm going to eat with anyone. And he starts with Matthew and Matthew's friends and all the way through to the end of his journey here. The ripple effects of that decision are still being felt at Zacchaeus's life. Jesus made a decision that had ripple effects. Matthew made a decision with ripple effects. He decided to leave the life that he paid such a social cost to build his wealth, and he walks away from all of it to follow Jesus, and then brings his friends to meet him, and opens a thing where all those people keep wanting to congregate around and go where Jesus goes and upset the good people for being there. And Jesus loved it. And Matthew has caused ripple effects, and Jesus has caused ripple effects, and Zacchaeus is feeling them. I want to say that to you, for those of you who are trying to do good in your life today, listen to me, if you're trying to do good today, and you wonder what a difference you're really making through your efforts, you wonder if you're really doing as much as you hoped you're doing, you're trying, but you're not sure the splash you're making is that impressive. Don't get discouraged. You never know the ripple effects of your faithfulness. Sometimes the things you do have effects way beyond you. Sometimes the outcomes don't arrive until later. Sometimes much later. Sometimes maybe beyond our life. You never know what good you do will do now and later. Let's just serve like Jesus served. Let's just sacrifice for others. Let's do good, and the results will always follow. So is everyone happy? Zacchaeus is happy. Jesus is happy. Is everyone happy? No. Look at verse 7. But the people were displeased. Who are the people? The people outside the house. Oh, they're upset. What do they say? They said, he has gone to be the guest of a notorious sinner. They grumbled. Again, table fellowship. Like of all the people to be within this town, that guy? Does he not understand how that looks? What kind of a message he is sending? Let's be honest now. Let's be real. That's the kind of thing we would say to somebody today. Do you not know what kind of a signal you're sending when you do that? It seems to be like you're saying that you're okay with this, and I just think you just need to be careful with things because I have a strong opinion and about who you're with and what you're doing and what you're around. But I've said before, and I'll say it again, if Jesus was worried about guilt by association, he would have just stayed in heaven. Because all of us were in the wrong zip code. Right? Yeah, but my bad is not as bad as somebody else's bad. But Jesus just says, I came for all of you, man. I love you. I'm here for you. And so, they're upset. But guess what? While they're upset outside the house, guess what's happening inside the house? Look at verse 8. Meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I will give half my wealth to the poor, Lord, And if I have cheated people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much. And that's a wonderful outcome. And I know for some of us, that might be the thing that if it bothers us that Jesus is okay, or that we're talking about Jesus being okay with people that we're not okay with, that maybe this story makes us feel better because we're like, okay, well, as long as they turn their life around real fast, then I'm good with that. But I want to challenge that thinking with two thoughts. First, the second thought will be, let's look at what Zacchaeus says and doesn't say in this verse in a moment here. But remember before this, that Jesus has been doing what he's done for Zacchaeus since Matthew. And the results have been mixed. Matthew immediately has a life transformation like few people had. Totally. But then a bunch of people that came to Matthew's house to eat with Jesus, they followed him around wherever he went because they were infatuated and they loved it and they'd sit and hear him teach. But they still weren't right. That's why the religious crowd was mad that they were in the room. Those people shouldn't be in this room. They shouldn't feel welcome in this room. All these times they keep coming back. Why are we not making them less comfortable here? So not everyone who met Jesus and felt welcomed by him was changing quick enough. And yes, Zacchaeus seems to have a pretty fast step of progress here, but what does he say? In the second part, he says, if I have cheated people on their taxes, I'll give them back four times as much. Notice the word if. Is he saying that he did, but he doesn't want to admit it? I'm not saying I did, but if I did. Or is he saying, I've tried to be honest. I'm not trying to intentionally cheat anyone, but let's be honest. Sometimes I'm dealing with my own work and the people who answer to me in the tax business, and we're dealing with difficult people who hate us anyhow, so I've not tried real hard to get everything just right when they're being belligerent. But I'll go back over the records, and I'll double check if anyone has been wrong treated by us. I will pay them back four times as much. That's a pretty good investment right there, by the way. Go to the stock exchange and find the ticker, $ZAC. I'll pay him back with a 4x return on investment. That's a pretty good deal. And he says, I'll give half my wealth to the poor. He's a wealthy man. I'll give half of it to the poor. Why not all of it? A few weeks ago, we saw Jesus meet a rich young man that came to Jesus and said, what can I do to earn eternal life? And Jesus told that guy, sell everything you have, give it all to the poor, come follow me to the cross. And this guy, Jesus asked nothing of Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus offers this voluntarily and is less than Jesus asked to that guy. And Jesus is going to applaud him for this in a minute. Why the difference? And the difference was because a few weeks ago, that rich young man was trying to earn his own way to heaven. He didn't trust in Jesus as a savior. He said, I want to get it. What must I do? And Jesus said, if you're going to be perfect, it looks like me, come do what I'm doing. That's not what's happening here. Zacchaeus knows he's not perfect. He knows he's a sinner. Everyone's been telling him that his whole life. But he has believed in the Lord. He calls him Lord. And he says, I know who you are. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to speak up. No one asked. I'm going to make right any wrongs I've committed. I'm going to give half my wealth. I'm going to do a 50% shave of my wealth to the poor. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. That's a pretty big number. Say, well, if I had lots of money, I'd do the same thing. Not likely. Time has proven, and I've seen it over the decades, that if we don't give proportionately when we have little, we won't give proportionately when we have much. It doesn't get easier to give larger portions of money away than we won't give away now. Zacchaeus is going to make a major sacrifice and give half of his wealth to the poor. And notice what he says he's going to do. No one asked. Notice what he does not say. He does not say, and I will stop collecting, being a tax collector. You see, what Zacchaeus promised to do is basically stay pretty wealthy, just not as wealthy, and keep doing what he's doing. And while we applaud that, to a lot of people outside that house, they would say, that's not enough. Because you are not a true child. You are not. You are still in a way of life, living a life that I disagree with, and you are still too messed up for me. I don't care that there's growth. It's not to my expectations for you to be okay. But that's not what Jesus said. Jesus says in verse 9, Jesus responded, salvation has come to this home today. Huh. For this man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham. That's a powerful statement right there. Because all the people in Israel would have said, this man's a traitor to his country. He's not a true child of Abraham. And Jesus says, oh, he is. In fact, you could say he's not even a person of Israel. He says, you could be a Gentile, not a Jew, and still be a more true child of Abraham. Because Father Abraham's faith through his wealth and his goodness And this man shows himself to be, well, truly what everyone else claims to be. It's a powerful endorsement for Zacchaeus. And then look at verse 10. Jesus says, "For the Son of Man came to seek and save those who are lost." Some of us have memorized that or seen that before, or maybe it's on a picture frame somewhere you've seen or own. We ought to think about that. Jesus said, "I came," he's the Son of Man, "I came specifically to seek after the people that everyone else is like, oh, stay away from them. Oh, I'll tell you what, pray for revival, and some people, I'll tell you what, I'll rant." And he says, "I came to seek out the lost." That's me, that's me, that's you, that's all of us. That's people lost like me and people lost in different ways than me, and to save those. And that's what happened with Matthew and all of his friends and Zacchaeus, and they all came to respond in different time frames, but Jesus came for that group, for all of us, for me, for you. Nobody is here because we checked the boxes and God's lucky to have us. We don't come and sing songs of worship in our own name. We seek to praise the name of our Savior who did for us what we could not do for ourselves. And so, as I get ready to wind this down, let me say this. Jesus loved in order to lead. So I want to lead people to Jesus. Jesus loved in order to lead. We saw that 2 weeks ago with John and James and their mama. He says, listen, no, the greatest is the servant. If you want to be a leader, serve. And Jesus served, and Jesus loved in order to lead. He created community before he corrected. We have so many stories, if you've been with us on this journey, of Jesus creating community before he ever corrected. I can tell you several of them. We have no more time. We're out of time. But I'll give you one reminder about the woman caught in the act of adultery. Everyone's trying to drag her. Well, he's trying to teach people, and they're trying to drag her for what she's done. Jesus is like, what? He stood for her and chased off all of her critics. So everyone left. It was just him and her, and he says, I don't condemn you. And then he says to her, go and sin no more. But he always created community before he corrected. He led with relationship before rules, which is what God did in the Hebrew story of Israel coming out of slavery in Egypt. He brought them out of slavery, brought them to the wilderness, and then after setting them free, says, here's what I want you to do. And Jesus is following the Father. He's leading with relationship before rules. He's leading with engagement before expectations. And that's why he ate with anyone. That's why he had crowds, come on now, crowds following him wherever he went, even though the quote-unquote true believers could have all fit into one upper room. Jesus made room for people to belong before they believed. And I've really hit this point home today. I know it's late and I got to get baptisms and everything, but this is too big of a conversation. It's almost a bookend conversation of the ministry of Jesus, what he came to do. And if we're going to get this right, if we're not going to be a bunch of people today who claim to follow him while actually getting lost in our own religious version of Christianity, if we're going to be doing what Jesus did then, what he calls us to do, then listen carefully, we must make room for people to belong before they believe. And I think Lighthouse does a good job of this. I think we do, but I think we remind ourselves to do so. If we're going to get this right, we have to. It's hard to make any difference when you only scream from a distance. And a lot of people do that. And this is the kind of conversation I'm having right now that is not going to, well, it's not popular with many religious groups and people. In a social media day and age, if I was significant enough to be noticed, and I'm not, thankfully, if I was, this is the kind of thing that I get dragged for by religious people for saying. But Jesus got dragged for the same thing. And we got to be okay with that. I'm going to give you an action step. I try to give you an action statement every week. This is a big one. It's going to need the whole screen to fit it. Are you ready? Here's your action statement. Love first. That's it. So what about change and results? Love first. But I want to see, I know, but love. Love, love, love first. If you want to make a difference, and I want to bring people to Christ. And what do you mean by that? I'll bring them the message of Christ. What does that mean? The gospel. What's the gospel? Well, the gospel means good news, right? Good news. What's the good news? It's the death and burial and resurrection of Jesus. Yes, but John the Beloved said technically, it's that God is love. So no, it's the death and burial and resurrection of Jesus. That's the gospel. The gospel, can I quote you a verse? For God so loved the world that he gave his son. It's the love of God that is the gospel, the good news. That his arms are open and wide, and Jesus models it, and he loved first. And here's the thing, you want to make a difference in the world around you, we have to lead with giving the thing we hope people will receive. If the world sees a bunch of people who call themselves Jesus followers, who stand at a distance with arrogance and judgment and critical spirits, making zingers on Facebook or other social media apps, ripping apart people whose lives they don't agree with and putting them down and condemning and snarky and nose in the air. If that's what they see from us, how will they ever see the love of God? That's a terrible way to model Jesus. We have to lead with giving the love we want people to receive from him, because people cannot receive something they've not been given. And if we don't figure out as a country, as a church, broadly churches, how to love first and love long, we're going to keep coming up short with the message that Jesus came to give. So let's love first. It's good advice, not always easy advice. And you'll find plenty of people who are articulate, who will tell you all the reasons why we should never do this such a thing. They said the same thing to Jesus. But let's follow in his steps, because that's where the difference is made. Sometimes immediately with a splash, and sometimes through ripple effects down the line, if we will learn to love first.